Welcome back to Earth Station Trek, a podcast where we talk about Star Trek from the early days on NBC to the future on Paramount Plus and everything in between. I'm Charles Kelso, and it's my privilege to introduce my fellow hosts, Keith Johnson.
Hello, everybody.
Alan Seiler.
Yo.
And Veronica Daschle.
Hey.
And adjust your sensors, because today we're talking about the first season of Star Trek Lower Decks.
Good call out to start off. I died with that.
They do a lot of things like that, you know, just sort of tie in with Star Trek history, but also sort of call it out. I was watching the Doomsday Machine actually had playing last night on TV. And when Spock says sensors, I just smiled to myself because it's a thing now.
It is.
Well, Keith, you just finished watching Lower Decks. So it's sort of freshest in your memory. What was your first impression of the show watching it?
You know, it was one good thing about it was is it Rick and Morty that some of the creators did?
Yeah.
I haven't seen a single second of Rick and Morty.
Same here. I had no idea how to compare it. The only thing that I know about Rick and Morty is that one of them turns into a pickle.
Yes.
See, I didn't even know that.
That's the
pickle Rick.
And so I had literally no expectations. I hadn't really read a lot of reviews of the show, so I couldn't compare it to Rick and Morty. So I literally went in blind. I just okay, let's see what this thing is all about. And I kind of love it. I love it. I think what they did was, first off, I love cartoons, so it looks great. It looks kind of like the drawing of, I don't know, somewhere between The Simpsons and Family Guy, but it's really bright colors. One of the things that stunned me was the accuracy. I mean, like, do they have the Okudas behind this thing? The ships look great. The sounds are correct. It's a Star Trek show. It's a next generation show. And that surprised me. I think I was stunned about that. And I think the thing that caught me off guard most is I heard a lot of people hate it because they thought it was kind of silly. And then some people said, you're either going to like the humor or you're not. That wasn't a problem for me. But I think what really I like about it is what you were just saying, Charles, is sometimes fan service gets on your nerves. You know, like, personally, the Tribbles and the Abrams verse irritate me, Star Trek Beyond. But this show, everything doesn't seem like fan service because they're talking about real Star Trek. And so they can make jokes about, oh, like when she says, like in one episode when the lady says, I never thought of using the holodeck basically for training. And the guy goes, oh yeah, it's good for things besides meeting Da Vinci and Sherlock Holmes and stuff.
right.
And all these callbacks work. So I think it was a great show. I'm stunned how much I actually like this show.
Yeah, I had seen bits and pieces of Rick and Morty, and my impression of it at that time, I've watched a lot of it now, was that it was cynical, sort of gross, sort of snarky.
Yeah.
And so when they announced that, you know, a guy who had worked on Rick and Morty was going to be doing a Star Trek cartoon, I just thought, why? I don't want snarky, cynical, making fun of Star Trek show, you know?
Right.
But I was very pleasantly surprised, like you say, how Star Trek it is, and also how sweet it is. It's just a sweet, positive show. You know, where the humor will come out of things like how supportive everyone is of one another.
Right.
And that's the joke. And things like that, it just makes you feel comfortable, and it makes you feel like you're watching. And I think Mike McManus said this is one of his goals. Like you're getting one more 90s Star Trek show.
There's still one more to watch. Yeah, right? it's absolutely Star Trek. And to your point, it's kind of like I was a little afraid of because I don't personally like the Family Guy, and so I don't like a lot of what Seth MacFarlane does when it comes to like his animated stuff. Because to your point, I find his stuff a little cruel, a little mean spirited. So I was a little worried about that when the Orville came out. And to your point, I heard some people say, well, it's kind of like a Seth MacFarlane cartoon mixed with Rick and Morty. So I was expecting something to be a little more vicious with me. And it's not. Now, every now and then with the blood and guts, they catch me off guard. But I have to laugh at it. And so that was good.
It really does have a parallel with Orville, where you go in based on its creator with an expectation. And it really sort of flips your expectation on its head.
Right. Yeah.
You know, Orville turned out to be something completely different and much more of a loving homage to Star Trek than a sort of snarky takedown of it.
Exactly.
And this is the same thing. You kind of expect it to be fully irreverent, and it has its irreverent moments, but it's also loving. It's also a really positive reflection of and reference to everything else that we've had in Star Trek. And so I'm with you. I loved it.
Mm-hmm. One of my favorite things about it is the characters are fans of their own universe. Like, they nerd out
right.
over everything. So it's like the characters are you. Then you mm-hmm. get to, you're one of the people that gets to go on the ship. And so it's like you're nerding out on a ship. And that's one of the reasons I've enjoyed this so much.
That's a great point.
And it makes sense because they established in the final episode of Enterprise that Star Trek characters do just go down to the holodeck and watch Star Trek.
Yes.
So that, you know, they're as familiar with a lot of these adventures as we are, because you expect that if you're an ensign in Starfleet, that's the most excited about being in Starfleet anyone's ever going to be. Because you're a Starfleet nerd. The final episode of Enterprise, where Riker and Troy are just on the holodeck watching Star Trek.
And why wouldn't they?
Right. So you can imagine that, you know, these ensigns spend their off hours going to the holodeck and watching the Doomsday Machine or right. you know, Return of the Archons or whatever. They would have that sort of fans encyclopedic knowledge of what goes on or what's happened as far as the logs go.
Absolutely.
Sorry. I'm curious to know from all of you, when the trailers came out, what was your impression of the trailers and what did you expect going into the show? Because I'll tell you, the trailers did not sell me at all. Mm. Especially the one where it shows Mariner just going off about the blast shields and all that. I was like, oh my God, I'm going to hate this show.
You know what, Alan? This is incredibly rare, especially nowadays. I never saw a single trailer. I never saw a single screenshot. What? Nothing. Dude,
how
nothing.
Is that possible?
I don't know. I didn't see one trailer. I didn't see one screenshot. I, you know, through things like ESO Network and other Facebook groups and things like that, I just could tell that some people loved it and some people hated it. And what really caught me off guard is a lot of people said, you're either going to love it or you hate it. You couldn't be in the middle. And I completely disagree with that. Some people said that. I literally had zero expectations. Now, you know, I'm somebody who loves the 1970s animated series based on the original series. So it's not that my bar is low, but since I grew up on the original series and I grew up on black and white sci-fi movies about floating brains and stuff like that.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't have a huge requirement for like beautiful graphics and all that stuff. So I didn't have any, I literally had no expectations. I just thought, oh, well, we'll see what this thing is going to be like. And I thought I might not like it because I just read one blurb where someone kind of said kind of like Family Guy. And I really don't like Family Guy. Other than that, I literally just turned it on and you all said, watch it. And I'm like 5 minutes in, I'm like, man, I like this show. And I have laughed every single show. I mean, every single show. When I wasn't laughing out loud, I was chuckling every single show. And then one episode, which may be my favorite, is when they were doing the so-called trial, Veritas.
Yes, that's my favorite too.
I'm laughing out loud. Episode. That entire thing, I was just laughing out loud. So my first impressions, Alan, was I didn't have any, and I was blown away. I mean, my expectations were zero, and I was blown away.
There you go.
It's similar, like you compared it to the Orville. The Orville had a similar thing with the trailers, where the trailers made it look dumber than what it was, because they're exactly. really selling the humor. They weren't selling the Star Trek. But I guess they figured that if you're a Star Trek fan, you'll turn up eventually regardless. You know, they don't have to sell you. Mm-hmm. But and I thought that when the show started, I was just really impressed with the writing, just as someone who's sort of a nerd for screenplays and teleplays, mm-hmm. that how tightly constructed those first two episodes are, where you get in 22 minutes in the first episode, you get an introduction to the ship, the crew, this version of Star Trek, sort of what everyone's motivations are. You get a little Star Trek adventure, you get a Star Trek B plot. You get a sort of a C plot with a little date going on during the B plot. You know, it's very, very tightly interconnected in how they just naturally introduce all of those elements in the first episode. And then the second episode is really a primer for Star Trek, for people who haven't seen Star Trek. Because on the planet, you get an introduction to three little mini versions of Star Trek planets in the universe, the Klingons, the Andorians, Risa. Meanwhile, on the ship, you get an introduction to what each division on the ship does as That's Rutherford's true. Going around. So
I hadn't even thought about that.
That's a great point.
People like to act like it's a dumb comedy, but it's very smartly written.
Yeah.
Good point.
And they have so many little like Easter eggs in there.
Yeah.
It's it's unreal.
You have to freeze frame it to see everything that, you know, like all the stuff that pours out of Mariner's, you know, tug or whatever, well, a little chest he's carrying around.
Exactly.
For contraband. And it's like, oh, that's from this and that's from that. And, you know, you really have to watch the show in freeze frames to catch everything.
And yeah. Did you catch when the Spock helmet?
Yes.
Yes. From
that was the most brilliant inclusion.
It's canon now. Yes.
Exactly. Amazing. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. When I first started watching the show, I took a note and I thought, you know, it's very interesting because the whole concept of Lower Decks from the Next Generation and so forth, it really, you know, joke or serious, it always answers the question because there's some questions we ask about any universe that's created. For example, we always ask, what's life like for regular people who aren't in Starfleet in the time of the Federation? And one of the questions that you always asked until the TNG episode came up was, what happens to all those people who aren't on the bridge? You know, what about who aren't the bridge officers? And that's where that one episode in TNG came from. There was a Voyager that kind of did it. Then, of course, you had the web series. But, you know, one of the notes I took about this, which is something I've always asked, the first episode that the captain talks about, yeah, we're the second contact team. And, you know, there's this thing like we're the second string, we're the minor leaguers. But, you know, if you think about it, what so many times you watch a Star Trek episode, you'll see Picard or somebody say, okay, here's a treaty, bye. And I always do. And mm-hmm. you think about it, there's literally work to be done. Like Picard will kind of stop the fighting. And you know that a whole diplomatic corps is going to spend months, weeks, or years probably making sure that peace holds. Or they'll negotiate something to help a society, like for first contact with war. Well, you're talking years, if not decades, of work that has to be done. Somebody's got to bring in and install the first technology. Somebody's got to come in and be a diplomatic corps. Somebody's got to come in and help them farm or whatever. So I actually think, even though they play it off as kind of a joke, I think the so-called second contact is extremely important mm-hmm. and a logical concept, because that's what you have to do in real life.
Mm-hmm.
And
something we've not seen before.
Exactly. Right.
After this much Star Trek, that it's exciting that there's still things that seem obvious, like you say, but you know, mm-hmm. we haven't seen the guys who come in, you know, to get the paperwork signed and, you know,
absolutely.
You know, and figure out what to do after, you know, Captain Kirk upsets the natural order on a planet and then leaves.
Yeah, case in point, like when Spock told Kirk in the piece of the action, Kirk's like, okay, we're going to take part of the criminal enterprise's profit. And then he cobbles together this thing. We're going to put it in the whatever this planetary fund to help guide the Iotians to a better life. Well, think about the guy who comes back after Kirk and goes, are you kidding me? I got to go work with a criminal enterprise, that dude Kirk, who's now gone, you know? So I think that was kind of cool how they put that. And then, of course, they even brought Landru in to talk about the way back.
Yeah. Right.
So I love the second contact concept. Mm-hmm. I think it's fantastic.
And just sort of getting a view of what the Lower Decks people are up to, you know, what their interests are, what they do on a day-to-day basis, you know, what, you know, Boimler, who wants desperately to get promoted, which you would if you have a bunch of ensigns, and then you have Mariner, right, who doesn't want to get promoted. And, you know, that's sort of that odd couple team up of those two. I love those two characters, and Mariner in particular has really been a standout for me.
I'm going to say I had a little problem with Mariner about more the consistency with how she was presented. Mm. There were some episodes where she just comes off as I don't care about anything. I don't want to be here. I'm a problem because I'm a problem. And then there were other episodes that showed her that she really does care. Mm-hmm. In her core, she really cares. She really understands what Starfleet is. She understands protocol and all these kind of things. And I thought that it was very inconsistent with how, like from one week to another, you didn't know what Mariner you were going to get. And I thought that sometimes they took it way too far. Like the episode where they're negotiating in the boardroom and she just yawns,
yes,
exaggeratedly, and interrupts everything that's going on. And I thought, I don't care how much of a problem and how much you don't want to be there, no one would do that.
Right.
And that was because
I just thought it was too inconsistent.
She wanted to not be promoted. And I think, and I had posted this on the Facebook page when I said that Mariner is actually my least favorite character. And I have to kind of somewhat explain that. It's not that I don't like her, but it's exactly what you said, Alan. It's like everyone else on the show is a 9 or 9.5. She's an 8 or 8.5 for me. And it was specifically for the point you mentioned, which is it's a comedy and I get it. But to your point too, it's still Federation. So every now and then her behavior goes so far into the, she acts like she doesn't care, or she goes so far into the absolutely crazy insubordinate kind of behavior that it does kind of take me out of the show very slightly. It's one thing arguing with your mom. It's another thing calling your mom the B word in front of someone else. Little things like that.
Right.
You know,
right.
And it's one thing to kind of
speak. And not even your mother, but your captain.
Exactly. Thank you.
No one would do that.
Exactly. So very slightly, I want to see her tone down just a little bit, because even a couple of times she would do stuff on the planets where she'd say, okay, you're basically wanting to go by the book. I'm trying to help these people. Even then, a couple of times I'm thinking, yeah, but even then what you're doing is just pure and simply in violation of Federation law and your captain's law. So just a little bit, they go too far for me with her attitude, her disobedience, and just a little bit. But that's a minor complaint, but I absolutely agree with what you said, Alan. It's kind of inconsistent. And then I got to wonder, how old is she supposed to be? And by that, I mean, how long has she been in Starfleet?
That's another confusing point. Yeah. If she is a junior officer with all the other lower decks, she's clearly been around the block a lot longer than they have, because she knows Klingon captains and she's like friends with people on DS9 and all this experiential stuff.
It's been everywhere.
And it is, you know, it is kind of weird.
Yeah. At the same time though, both of her parents are high ranking Starfleet officers.
Sure.
So she could have been a Wesley Crusher and, you know, been on the bridge of a starship at 14.
That's and her good problem. friend is a captain, and there was even a comment about they were surprised she wasn't her friend, the lady who was British, that they used to basically look like they used to raise Cain together.
Right.
So you know, like we said, I think Picard was a captain at 28 or something like that, and we know Kirk was a captain also in his late 20s, early 30s. So to your point, it just seems weird because that means she's been demoted or passed over a lot.
Yeah, I think she's definitely been. She strikes me as a character who. She very much does care about Starfleet. Yeah. She knows everything about the ship, but it's an act. She acts like she doesn't care. Agreed. Maybe because she was demoted. Maybe it's one of those, I didn't want that job anyway. That job's lame. I'd rather be here. Or maybe she really did find that she can do more without the pressure of being at the higher rank. But
she should become a chief, like O'Brien.
Maybe, yeah. Well, that would be a demotion again for her. but it's something we've seen in Star Trek a few times with Kirk and with Riker, who were very driven characters and found out, you know, promotion doesn't always make you happy. Kirk was happier as a captain than he was as an admiral. Riker discovered he'd rather stay as a first officer for a while instead of becoming a captain. And then with Mariner, a character who wants to just be an ensign, and maybe she'll decide that she doesn't want to just be an ensign as the show goes on, or maybe she'll be a 50-year-old ensign.
I'm sorry, we already have that angle covered with Kim.
I'm hoping that Harry Kim shows up and he's also still an ensign.
Absolutely.
Oh, that would be great, wouldn't it? You know what? That joke could go two ways. You're right. Kim could either be an ensign or he could be like the highest ranking admiral in Starfleet because they made
Admiral
up
for Kim.
Yeah, exactly. It could go one way or the other. But yeah, Alan, I think that's exactly right. And that's why I said, when I said she's my least favorite, that literally does not mean I don't like her, because I really like her. Just a little tweaking there, I think, would go a long way with her. Just a little bit of tweaking.
And I like her as well. And in fact, by the end of the season, I was like 100% in her corner, you know? And I think there was a lot done in the last few episodes that really sort of galvanized her, that really sort of like everything sort of congealed, you know, everything started to really make sense. So I think it was a really interesting character arc. It was kind of like a bit of a roller coaster, and you never know what twist or turn you're going to get next. But by the end of the season, I felt like everything sort of fit. And I do really like her a lot.
Yeah, same here.
Well, so she's my favorite character. Who else has a favorite among the characters?
Peanut Hamper. I'm kidding, but relatedly, Tendi. I really love Tendi.
She's hilarious. Yes.
Yeah, I love her wide-eyed excitement and her optimism about everything, and her eagerness to please and to do well, and to prove herself. I just think she's a wonderful character. I really love her. Plus, she's voiced by Noelle Wells, who was a cast member on SNL for a couple of seasons. And I'm a huge SNL nerd. So, you know, seeing her on the show was a really cool surprise for me.
She's also one of my favorites. I don't know if I had like a favorite, but she's maybe inching a little bit past the others just because of her pure, easily excitement, which I can relate to a lot.
Just enthusiastic and positive about everything. You know, she's excited to go clean the captain's chair and in the conference room. And
right.
I love Mariner said, oh, that's lame. You don't want to do that. And then when she leaves, I never get to clean the briefing room. Exactly.
I'm like Veronica. I don't really have a true favorite because they're such a great cast overall. I just like them all. So there's not really one because they all have something to offer. And I do like the doc.
Oh my, yeah, man, absolutely.
She and my God and Shax, the security guy. They might kind of sort of slightly edge everyone out, but overall, I just kind of like them all equally. And to your point, I do like her when you said about how she's so wide eyed and she's literally like bright eyed and bushy tailed because to your point, when she was cleaning the conference room, they made a comment about you got to clean the doctor's. Yeah, you got to clean cat hair. And she's in there with a little lip brush. She's fine with it. You see the cat hair.
And that's realistic. There would be cat hair. Just 6 foot cat walking around on the ship.
And speaking up to your question about who do you like, one other thing, I'm really stunned because this is like 28 minute show. Mm-hmm. And what you were saying, Charles, they pack so much into a 28 minute show. I'm kind of stunned. The writing is that good and tight. And then have you noticed all the people on the periphery, the people at the stations, like engineering and stuff, they react. They're not just standing there. I tend to notice stuff like that, like when Boimler, when they were trying to give him a chance to give them a maneuver and he was just making up stuff, then you're like, maneuver number 88. Then they're like, and if the captain first says there's no wrong answer, and then he gives the answer, you go, are you kidding for this situation? And they show the people at the engineering station ops, they actually looked around and all the characters have, you know, they have expressions and stuff like that. So I'm amazed at the amount of detail that went into this show.
Absolutely. And you see the same faces again and again on the ship. Which is nice. You know, you'll see the same ensign at ops or the same, you know, lieutenant walking around in the background, which is nice. We were rewatching it just a week or so ago. And, you know, Veronica pointed out that I can't remember the name of that curly haired guy who sort of tried to bionic his brain, but he turns up several episodes earlier, just sort of as a background character.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Does he?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought he looked familiar. Okay. I've only gone through the show once. I didn't know that.
It's definitely a show that you can watch and rewatch, and there's more to see and more things to find. It's a very, very dense show, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, I guess if you're just watching it and you don't know Star Trek, it'd be funny on its own terms. But I guess also the more you know Star Trek, sort of the deeper the jokes go.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, they I thought they did a really good job with that. And you're right. And also, not just that you have characters, to your point, I think someone had commented on a couple of the Star Trek series, the ship felt kind of empty. You know, we talked about that. I think in the original series, it always felt like it was full. Every time you walked down the corridor, there were people everywhere. And a couple of the episodes, some of the series, people said the ship almost felt a little empty because you didn't see as many people walking on the corridor. But to your point on this show, they also take care for that. Every time they're walking down the hall or going anywhere, you see people. You see people like in the old series working on some open panel in the corridor. You see people walking up and down. You see people carrying stuff. So they did a lot to populate the ship with people and make it seem like it's a living ship.
And if I remember correctly, speaking of like background people, a couple of the people I remember that came on when Tinti came on, I remember seeing them later as background characters.
Oh, that's cool.
As well. So cool. I really enjoyed that they'll just like continue to use the background characters. So it's like they're the actual actors like they would have on the show.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Keith, you mentioned the ship. Let's talk about the ship. What do you think of the design of the Cerritos?
I don't like the design. What I don't like is I don't understand that weird module connecting the nacelles.
Right, exactly.
What is that thing and how do you get to it?
Right.
How do you get to it?
Is your only option getting to that part of the ship the transporters?
I wonder that. And I also, you know, even though with starships, you don't have to worry about this as much. You know, my first thought when I see something like that is, man, anytime a ship starts vibrating, you think that crap's going to pull apart. I could see they're always talking about micro fractures and stuff. I'm always thinking whatever that thing is, if there's any kind of vibration, it's going to tear apart. I don't like the design of the ship. I will say that. It's weird to me.
So I actually enjoyed the design of the ship. Mm-hmm. I didn't think about like the science behind it of how do they get there or it's gonna shake apart. It looked like a Star Trek ship without looking almost exactly like the Enterprise, which mm-hmm. is why I particularly liked it, because you've seen a lot of different Enterprises and some of them did not look so much Enterprise-y to me.
You take that back.
I thought this one did, and I thought I felt like it fit.
My first impression was that it was sort of awkward and gangly looking.
Yeah.
But after watching the show, I'm glad that it wasn't one of the sexy ships, because every time one of the cooler starships shows up, it's immediately apparent that, you know, the Titan or, you know, that now I've forgotten the name, but that ship that showed up with Boimler's girlfriend on it, you know, when you have a cooler, sleeker, nicer ship and everyone's excited, it wouldn't make much sense if the Cerritos was the coolest looking ship on the show.
Yeah.
You know, it's a little more industrial looking, a little more awkward looking, a little more, you know, like it was built for a purpose, not to impress people.
Yeah. I just can't get with that module down there. And I haven't had time. Has anybody looked it up? Have you looked it up, Alan? Is there anything approaching specs and stuff online where they actually identify what that module is down there between the nacelles?
Nah, I haven't looked.
There's a turbo shaft that runs if Discovery can have a turbo shaft that the Cerritos can fly through, then the Cerritos can have a small turbo shaft.
Right.
Well, so you take a turbo lift down through the warp nacelles while the warp plasma is flowing next to you.
Yes.
So it's like, so in that case, can you see somebody walking through the nacelles? It'd be like the joke about Star Wars. You know, the joke in Star Wars is everything they build has like this catwalk that's above it, and you always got to fall off and die. And so maybe that's what the nacelles, because
no railings anywhere.
Exactly. No railings anywhere. So that was it. But yeah, I don't love the design of the ship, but extremely minor.
See, I love it. It may not make logical sense, but I think it's gorgeous. I really think it's beautiful. Now, somebody, I was doing a show for a while, a Facebook Live thing. I started with episode one of Lower Decks and went through the whole 23 weeks of that and Discovery. Called Aft Deck. It was an after show. So we were talking about it, and somebody said that the Cerritos looked like a coffee table. I think it's hilarious, but I think it's a gorgeous ship, and I can't wait for Eagle Moss to come out with a really beautiful model of it.
I want a Hallmark ornament.
Yes.
Right. That thing suckling on the warp nacelle.
Yes.
So I can hang on the tree. Yes. And now I want a Cerritos coffee table. Thanks.
There you go.
Yes.
Speaking of that thing sucking on it, Charles, the opening is funny. Like I laugh every time I watch the opening when the Romulans are fighting the Borg.
Yeah.
And you see them sit there, and then they turn around.
Hit once and they're like, nope.
And the three, right? Nope.
Yeah.
They noped they out leave. Of there.
Peace out.
This is not our job.
But right. Even the music is good. Even the opening.
The music is fantastic.
The music thinks it's a straight Star Trek show.
Exactly. No comedy. And that sells the joke.
Right.
It does. It absolutely does.
It's treated seriously. It's treated like it's authentic, genuine, 100% Star Trek. And that's what makes the show so great.
Absolutely. I can't wait for that soundtrack to come out, because that's a great soundtrack.
Yeah, and every episode has really good music, especially the last couple of three episodes, especially the season finale.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And the holodeck movie episode, which was
so amazing.
All Star Trek movies in one.
Was great.
It really was. That was one of the most clever episodes of the season. I love that. I thought it was brilliant.
Yeah, the way the titles came in, you know, like when there was Star Trek Next Generation and later seasons, the title would come in and they would kind of do that thing of extend backwards. They did that. And I thought that was great. Yeah, that was fantastic.
And then the closing credits that had the signatures of each one of the characters.
Yeah.
That was just one of the smartest episodes.
Yes. And Boimler signed his over the eye. He put the little Delta symbol for the badge over it.
Of course he did.
Of course yeah, he did. That was instant great.
Suck up.
And we've seen Star Trek characters watching movies, and we've seen them having holodeck adventures, but we've never seen them why wouldn't you watch a movie on the holodeck that could be three-dimensional?
Right.
You know?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Right.
I'm sure
Barclay do that.
Does. Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure Barclay does something like that.
Yeah.
Yes.
The wrong kind of movie.
Well, there was a couple of jokes, like the one time when Mariner was getting punished, and there was that whole thing about cleaning out the holodeck.
Yeah.
And there was a comment about, and they do it. What are they doing there? That's all they do in there. What was that? What was that supposed to mean?
We all know what people do in the holodeck.
Yeah, they kind of left it open there. I thought that was funny too, which is
humans
great.
Would be humans.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I do have to say, to the point about I don't think I've seen a show that does so much what we would have called fan service and callback as successful as this show is, because I never once just really groaned like as I have many other times when they talked about even Tribbles or the holodeck, or like when they went into the holodeck and you knew it was going to malfunction. I actually took a note and just go, yes, because the holodeck never malfunctions. Doesn't the holodeck always malfunction? I mean, you know, I love the things like that they do. So I thought that was just, and the transporter, when Rutherford was working on the transporter, my gosh, what's the joke? The transporter is always going to go bad. It either splits you into your evil self, or it turns you into twins, or with Barclay, it puts you in that weird space where he was grabbing the people. And I still don't get that one episode, Realm of Fear. And so I think their callbacks and their incorporation of all the things that are funny and serious in the show is probably the best I've ever seen anyone do. And what it's kind of a satire.
Yeah. And because it's animated, they can bring back anything they want.
Yeah.
And you don't have to radically Landru. Like you said, Landru could just show up and he's just Landru. They don't have to do a cool new modern Landru. He's just literally Landru.
That was fantastic.
He doesn't have to be an old guy in a bowler hat.
Right. Oh, that was great. That guy goes, oh, I like the Red Hour, and I just bought this scythe.
Just bought a new scythe.
Okay, so we were just talking about the holodeck. Badgie.
Yes!
Oh
my gosh. Badgie was hilarious.
That was brilliant.
And then when they brought him back later.
Yes.
And Badgie's one of those things where it's taking an idea from Star Trek, a holodeck character becomes sentient, goes rogue, but doing it in a very cartoon way.
Yes.
Really taking advantage of the fact that it's a cartoon that we're watching. I thought Badgie was great.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought him up, Veronica, because I took a note on that too. And again, because again, that was the thing. It makes no sense. Literally, they just lost a little power. And all of a sudden, not only did the safety protocols go off, but he turned evil. That makes no sense. But that's what happens in the holodeck. And so I thought it was a perfect homage to the holodeck. And then he just literally goes, bam, just like that. And then he's trying to kill him. That was great.
And then when he comes back, when they're trying to get him, they're like, oh, you have to disable the safety protocols. Oh, you're not going to turn evil on me. I'm Badgie. It's just so hilarious. You're like, oh my God, this is going to go so bad.
And he already had three viruses. And he said, you're monitoring the comms? I always monitor the comms.
Yes.
So he already had the viruses ready to go.
Yep.
I had friends who adopted Badgie as their Facebook profile picture.
Seriously?
like 10 minutes after the episode was
right
over.
Yeah,
it's really funny how he just like kind of took off in popularity.
And they incorporate just standard like movie corniness, because remember when Badgie finally supposedly went back to good at the end, he's like, father, you know, all the almost redemption, and then he breaks his neck and he goes, Badgie. It was almost like, it was as good as a Carol Burnett spoof of a classic movie. So I thought Badgie was a fantastic incorporation into the, I bet he'll be back somehow.
Yes.
He probably downloaded himself somewhere.
Back.
Yeah, he has to come back.
Yeah.
He is great.
Well, what episodes stood out to you? Is there one that you like more than the others, or
Veritas? That was the one where they thought they were on trial, because everything from the movies, everything from the series was in that. Like you say, you go in there. It was straight out of the Star Trek movie, right? The Final Frontier, mm-hmm. because you go in there and they all, you know, it's like they're saying later, well, it was dark in here and you're hitting on the podium with this thing and all this kind of stuff. But then they're like, well, no, it was basically this party planner and stuff like that. But that show was fantastic. And then the things they did, like Rutherford, when his implant kept rebooting, and he would lose consciousness and he'd wake up and he's on the ship like, boy, you sure took those Vulcans out. He goes, I don't even know how to neck pinch. What are you talking about? And then it's rebooting. And then one point he goes, the implant goes, downloading Klingon fonts. He goes, why do I need those? Wait. And then and I'm like, what the heck? Klingon fonts? I love that. That show was like perfect. I loved everything about it. And then I was like, okay, what's it going to be at the end? And then it was so incredibly stupid. I got it. Look, you only booked the room for 22 minutes. that was hands, that and the season finale.
Well, I think the season finale sort of like demands its own bit of this episode. It gets its own discussion.
Right.
So other than the finale, the one about Boimler's girlfriend, I absolutely love that episode. And I'm not really sure why. It was so good with, you know, and it builds on that joke of how much the Lower Decks crew care about each other. Mariner was determined to protect her friend.
Yeah.
And to find that there is something going on and that she knows that there's, you know, some evil afoot. And I just thought it was a wonderful episode. And it did a lot to establish not only their relationship, but the individual characters. It really gave you a sense of who these people are. And I just loved it. I thought it was wonderful.
And given that it's a comedy and the way the show is, honestly, the whole time I kept thinking, well, what if she is some kind of metamorph, shape-shifting, alien. But she wasn't. She was just a normal Starfleet officer. And I kept waiting for that other shoe to drop.
She was close, though. There was the parasite going on.
Oh, yes, gosh. Exactly.
She was just looking in the wrong direction for, for the cause. She knew this couldn't be right. I love when she said that, let me guess, when we meet your girlfriend, it'll strangely have to be on the holodeck.
Right. Yeah.
So another episode I really liked, and I don't remember the episode name, was when they went to that crystal planet and they accidentally brought the log and they got locked up and they had to fight. That was hilarious with the Kirk fighting. Like,
yes. Yes.
I was cracking up the entire time. And I don't know if I've actually watched it because I've laughed so hard each time I watched it. So, yeah. That was amazing.
That was a fun one.
To your point, Veronica, here we go again. Did you notice that before Ransom fought the guy, he tore his own shirt off?
Oh, yeah.
Complete
the look.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
And then more than once when he fights, he would not only do it, but he would say, double punch, double punch.
Yes.
I'm looking forward to seeing more of the relationship between Mariner and Ransom.
Yes.
Yeah, that's I thought that episode did a lot to make Ransom seem like less of a stooge.
Yes.
A lot of times during the season, he doesn't come off real well.
Right.
But in that episode, I love that it's his responsibility. He's not going to let Mariner fight this guy. He stabs her in the foot. And then, like you say, I'm a sucker for Kirk Fu. So anytime they break out the Kirk Fu, I'm there.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I thought that was good too, because he is the first officer of a starship. And to your point, he's eminently competent. No matter what they try to do with it, he's trying to pick up the women, like the one episode where they were sitting in the thing and he's like, hey, why don't we take this party back? And then Mariner goes, you know, that's a salt vampire, right? He goes, no, is it? And then over his shoulder, she's turned and she's got the suckers and everything. But you're right, he's not really just a clown. He's an extremely capable officer.
Yeah, and I love that he even says, no, the salt vampires have been extinct for over 100 years.
Exactly.
We're acknowledging the canon, and yet here's a salt vampire.
Absolutely. That was fantastic. And then like 2 seconds later, he goes, salt vampire.
Yeah, there was a string of episodes after the first two that I thought were pretty uneven, that I liked some elements, didn't like the other elements, but really the last four episodes really were just knocking it out of the park for me.
Absolutely.
I particularly love the one with the Division 14 shows up and have to take Boimler and the dog. And you get the Division 14 specialist who's an Adosian, like Eryx.
Yes.
You get all the sort of cast-offs of various adventures across the universe where they couldn't fix them. You get the guy who's half a rascal and the two people who were transported together, and then
yes, you
know, one woman who's in a Captain Pike chair, and then you get right. the one giant salamander.
Oh my gosh. I just saw that episode. I just saw, what is that, Threshold? I just saw Threshold about a month ago. So yeah, that was instantly recognizable. That was great.
And then too, it's one that with both Mariner storyline and with the Division 14 storyline, they were sort of setting me up to like, that things were going to be bad. Like either Mariner was incompetent or that, you know, that Starfleet really wasn't taking care of its people. But then you get the twist on both of those storylines at the end. Like, no, Mariner really is competent, and there really is a farm where they're taking good care of everybody and finding cures for them and that sort of thing. Yeah, I loved that one. But really, that last string of four episodes, I thought were just nailing it.
Absolutely. To your point about, was it Division 14? Was that what
I
it was?
So.
Well, to your point about that, thanks to Section 31, every time you hear an appellation that starts with division or section, to your point, you instantly think it's bad. Because Wambler said, was it section? When she said what it was, he said, is it this one thing? And they're like, no, not that one. This is this.
The time travel police.
That's it. That's right. So right. There's still all these little divisions and sections that they're kind of nervous about. I thought that was a great homage to Section 31. And to your point, I was even thinking that was like, well, are they going to say that there's this kind of obviously almost evil entity so open in the Federation? It turns out, no, that's not the case. And I love the ending when once he was no longer phasing and those women go, wait, you're no longer a freak? Yes, I'm a freak. Like, get out of here.
Speaking of Boimler, after having watched Lower Decks and then The Boys came back on, I couldn't watch The Boys without seeing him in his purple hair.
That's right.
I would love to see, like, surely he can just have purple hair, but I would love it to be like he is of alien descent, you know, like the only physical difference between humans and Betazoids is they have black irises in their eyes. Mm-hmm. That's
right.
It. You know, otherwise, you just think they're a human. I want it to be like he's descended from some race where their trait is purple hair. And
that would be fantastic.
That would be amazing.
Yeah.
But he doesn't know it.
Right.
That'd be an awesome plot.
Yeah, like his grandfather from Catula or whatever. But speaking of that, though, there's a lot of little parallels that popped up between the recent season of Discovery and between Lower Decks. Because you just made me think of it when you're talking about his purple hair, and then you had the guy with purple hair with blue hair. It was in Discovery.
Yeah.
The ghost boyfriend and little things like that, and things like cat, you know, calling out, sort of finding the catchphrase, and there's a lot of little things that sort of popped up between both shows that made it a lot of fun to watch them back to back.
Yeah, I that's a good point, because I was thinking the same thing, which is with Discovery in this show, they're taking it to different places while holding true to the canon. Mm. And so you're right, they're adding some things, and I thought that was really good too. And I thought it was funny, but at the same time, they're kind of expanding it. They still hold some of the things, like, you know, so all the shuttlecraft had specific names. There was a Yosemite, there was a Joshua Tree, there was a Redwood. Yeah. And if you remember, they often had things. I know in Deep Space Nine, all the shuttles were named after rivers on Earth, like the Ganges and the Orinoco and all these kind of things like this. And then here I noticed there was a shuttle Yosemite and a Joshua Tree and a Redwood. So I'm thinking, okay, is that the forest? Is that the national parks kind of thing?
Yeah.
So I thought little things like that was kind of cool.
Well, the Cerritos is a California class ship. And all the ships in that class are named after towns or small cities in California. Cerritos is a town in California.
That's right. I did not know that. And that was the thing I meant to figure out what that was. Okay. Mm-hmm.
And I think all the, like, the Joshua Tree and Yosemite over, like, California national parks.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've been pretty positive. What did you not like about the show? Or what do you think could have been improved on?
For me, it's like what Alan said. I think the only thing is I'd like to see Mariner tweaked just a little bit. She, every now and then when she goes, she's a little too insubordinate. And like Alan said, the whole thing with the yawning, a couple of things like that were so kind of outrageous that they took me out of the world I was in. And other than that, I'm in the world. You know, it's a funny world, but I'm in the Federation and Starfleet world. So I'd like to see her character tweaked just a little bit. So she every now and then kind of sort of got on my nerves with that behavior. And honestly, other than that, I didn't, like you mentioned also, Charles, that the writing was a little uneven, but I think they'll just get better. Yeah. I honestly have to say, I couldn't think of anything else that really bothered me about the show. I mean, I really liked it. I sat there, you know, I'm not critical, but since, you know, like so many of us, I've been watching Star Trek for 49 years now, and I notice things whether I want to or not. Nothing truly bothered me, which is rare for me to say that.
Yeah, one thing that sort of would bug me as the show went on, especially in those middle episodes, was I don't like it when the humor or when the story comes out of Starfleet characters being incompetent.
Yeah.
In that same episode you were talking about, Alan, where she's yawning during the briefing. And then you have that the cap, you know, her mom is sort of portrayed as an incompetent captain in that episode and her little rivalry with the Tellarite captain. And then he, for no reason or just for his sort of pride, moves the ship closer. Things like that. That in that episode, sort of in particular, just I'm glad that they seem to have gotten away from that as the show went on. Even though they're the captains of, you know, a less important class of ship, or just because you're following the characters on the lower decks, I don't want to see them being incompetent. I want to see them all be competent. Starfleet, they can make mistakes. Starfleet officers do, but don't be stupid.
That's a good point. If I quit real quick, I know we keep going back to the show. I remember one of the things that I didn't like about the Orville, the very first episode, is when I forget the brother's name. You know, he was the one who turned out later. He was sitting at the helm, and they turned out he was a genius, and he became the engineer, the black guy. The very first episode where he got like explicitly, and he was kind of doing things to the statue on that one planet, which is what landed him. That was, even though the show was a comedy, to your point, like, dude, that wouldn't happen. It just wouldn't happen in any service anywhere on the planet. So to your point, I can kind of see what you're saying, because I hadn't thought of it, but you're right. When that one captain basically like, well, move us closer to it, dude, seriously. So I can see that a little tweaking there too. I can agree with you there.
Veronica, what you got?
I have nothing negative at all whatsoever.
I don't either. I mean, honestly, I can't think of anything that I really disliked about it.
Like, the only thing I didn't like was there wasn't more episodes.
Like. Yeah. That's a good point. And also, I would like to have seen more episodes of the foursome together. Right. I want to see their relationship develop as a group. And they always seem to be paired off. Almost every episode, they were paired off with Boimler and Mariner doing their thing and Tindy and Rutherford doing their thing. And I want to see more of a group dynamic with them. That's it. Right. That's my only note.
Or even changing up the pairing.
Yeah. You know,
Tindy and Boimler on an adventure, or Rutherford and Mariner.
Right on.
I really enjoy the sort of dynamics they've got going on with those characters, and I even like that for whatever reason their bunks are in a hallway,
you know. I do too.
It's got sort of that college feel to it,
right?
The guy walking around with a towel.
Speaking of Rutherford, I will say one slight tweak. I would like to make him just a little less nerdy, make him a little less kind of really, really, really getting into being an engineer. That's me. I kind of wanted him a little more well-rounded. But a question I have, and they didn't explain, did they ever say why he has those implants? That wasn't, I didn't know something.
Nope.
They haven't said if he was injured or if he just decided to upgrade. Yeah. Which he seems like the kind of character who might just upgrade his brain.
Yes.
True. I mean, they still haven't told us what Detmer's implants do either. So, you know, there you go.
Yeah. Good point.
So can we talk about the finale?
Yes.
Yes.
Holy moly.
What a surprise that was.
Exactly. And I'll tell you why, because it was a regular episode of Lower Decks, but it also was a big epic thing that had weight.
Yeah.
You know, it felt like it mattered. And I just thought it was so unexpected and so well done. And spoiler alert, Shax dies in it, and you care.
Yeah.
You know, you really care that this character has died and that they mourn him and that they have a funeral for him. And man, I just thought it was an incredible final episode.
Yeah. And even from the very beginning of the episode, when the other ship is destroyed by the Pakleds.
Yeah.
And it was just like, whoa, this is what we're doing this week. It was still funny. I love that she didn't want anybody to have their shoes on the bridge and, you know, don't want to take the little plastic covers off of the pads on the ship because the ship is brand new. But then they get captured and destroyed, and it gets very serious really quickly.
Yeah. But also, it's such a Lower Decks thing to me that the Packlids are the big bad.
Right.
You know, that they take this throwaway race that, you know, showed up in season two of Next Gen, and they make them a credible threat.
Yeah.
I thought that was amazing. So I do want to see more of that, of the lesser known, you know, maybe one off kind of races become prominent in this show. And I thought that was a really great use of them.
Because there are a ton of one off aliens that really could come back. That like the Packlids, and I love that the Packlids are a very serious threat to the Cerritos type ships.
Yeah,
you know, it's like the Romulan or Borg level threat to them. But then when you know, when the Titan shows up, blam blam blam, they're not actually Romulan or Borg level threat now. But if you happen to be on one of these little sort of survey type ships, you don't want to tangle with the Packlids.
All right, so the Titan shows up,
which was the most amazing moment
of the episode.
Yes.
Is there a series that Riker and Troy have not been in? I mean, Troy did not make any appearance in DS9.
That's true. It.
That's the only thing I can think of.
Riker didn't either.
Riker.
Well, okay, true. Yeah. True. A Riker did.
Right.
Yeah. Thomas Riker. Yeah.
Yeah. But I love that they are sort of like almost the defining couple of Star Trek, of modern Star Trek. They have been in every show.
That's a good point.
And it's almost like you expect them to turn up. Keith, you haven't watched Picard yet, have you?
No, I have not finished it, correct. I'm only halfway through.
The episode that they are in is amazing.
Yes. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Looking forward to that. To your point about the Packlids, it was funny because the show, every now and then through the show, they killed people. And it was funny. You know, there were people died in the show, and it was kind of funny. But to your point, Charles, when her the other captain's ship tried to get away at warp, I kept waiting to see where those people are going to survive. And I played that scene two or three. And the other thing was the animation was phenomenal in this show, episode. Yeah.
It really was.
And when she said go to warp and you saw the nacelle tear off and then you saw what was basically a line of light, I was thinking they were going to maybe say that somehow the saucer section got away, and I kept waiting. Mm. Like, they killed them.
Yeah.
Like, I was kind of stunned. They killed those people. Right. And then you balance that humor, because then the guy goes, Enterprise, we have you. We're not the Enterprise, we're the Cerritos. And then later on the Taisha, another Enterprise. Like, okay. Now they're doing the whole Packlet thing again.
And that's why I liked the episode so much, is that it had consequences.
Mm-hmm.
It felt dangerous.
Yeah.
It wasn't, there was comedy, but it wasn't a joke.
Right.
Absolutely.
Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant episode.
And that episode paid off a lot of character arcs as well.
Right.
And then at the end, you think Boimler has sort of is happy now where he is. And has decided, but then as soon as he has a chance to be on Riker's ship, he's going to take it because he's got to. He's Boimler, you know. So,
and then Mariner's jealous.
Absolutely right.
But what I liked about that was that Boimler steps into this new crew, this new setting, and he is sort of the Mariner to these new characters.
Right.
I love that, and now you know he's going to come back to Cerritos at the beginning of season two.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he'll probably find the grass isn't greener. You know, maybe he doesn't like it as much as he thought. Or maybe he's just a little too much of a bonehead to work for Riker.
It's possible.
I like this version of Riker as well. He's more fun, more jokey than Riker tends to be. Riker can be jokey, but not to the degree that he is in this show. I love the sort of the... It's interesting to me to see him translated into a cartoon character to see what... And I loved his little references to jazz and things like that.
Right, right.
Yeah, and I like when she said that, where do you think I get all my contraband? Ramen and ale, some other illegal stuff. And then he cuts the transmission and Troy says, we're going to talk about this.
All right.
I'm sorry, real quick. So you said to your point, Alan, about the ship coming in. And then they played the TNG theme. Comes in. And the music. And then they did the dun, 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 dun. I mean, they did everything. And I'm thinking, there are some really great people writing this show. And it's less than 30 minutes. I'm stunned that so much happened in a 30-minute show.
Right.
Stunned.
Okay, so quickly, what do you hope to see in season two?
Ooh,
we already know that Sonia Gomez is coming back into season two, which I am thrilled about. Now, she may only be a one-episode character. I don't know, but I'm so excited to see her again.
Interesting.
I'm looking forward to seeing who they're going to make the chief security officer.
Yeah, true.
I really hope it's the same voice actor, but a different character. That would be so hilarious.
I would like to see sort of a continuation of the character arcs that we've seen, because I thought the characters have been really well done on this show. And I want to see what it's like for Mariner and her mom sort of being on the same side for a change, and how well is that going to work out. I want to see how Boimler enjoys being promoted and serving on Riker's ship, and what's going to bring him back to the Cerritos. I'm interested to see Tendi and Rutherford, how their relationship develops now that apparently he's... Are they going to undo the fact that he has amnesia? Are they just going to roll with the fact that he has amnesia?
I really hope they roll with it.
Yeah. I'm really impressed that after 10 episodes of this cartoon, I'm really invested in the characters. And I really want to see what happens to them next.
Mm-hmm. Same here. I think I'd like to see, to your guys' point, I'd like to see Mariner grow more. I wouldn't mind, although they may not do it, I wouldn't mind seeing her get promoted to something and still, you know, because you can still kind of sort of be around Lower Decks and not just be an ensign. So I'd like to your point, I'd like to see her be just a little less clownish, a little less insubordinate, and have a little bit more of a relationship with her mother. And also, as one of you said too, I think I'd like to see a little bit more with Ransom, where he's not just the stereotype kind of, you know, good looking goofy guy. I'd like to see a little bit more competency out of him, because again, he's the first officer on the starship. He's got abilities.
Okay, mine is really specific. I want to see them go into, like, I don't know what. I don't know if they go into the past. I don't know if they go into an alternate reality. But I want them to do an episode in the style of Filmation. I want them to do one that looks exactly like the original animated series.
Oh, well, the anniversary of the animated series will be coming up in, 2023? So that might be a good time to do it. That would be a good time, too. People keep asking when Shatner's coming back to Star Trek. That would be a good one to bring Shatner into.
That's
sort of like the Trial and Tribulations, but do a Lower Decks version where they're in an animated series episode.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they could bring back the music, like that one chord that they played for every action, you know, in every episode of the animated series, which I actually like. Every time they'd fight and run, they played that one little thing. So that's a good one, Alan. I like that.
Thank you. I really do. I really want to see, you know, because The Simpsons played around with that. The Simpsons did a number of things where they played with doing their show in different animation styles.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I want to see Filmation. Oh, man. Because I love the original animated series.
Me too.
I absolutely love it.
They've already had a lot of references to it. The Vandorian with the Edosian with the ship that looked like those robot ships from More Tribbles, More Troubles that they found adrift.
Yeah.
They seem to be going out of their way to put little nods. And the fact that one of the main characters is Cation.
Right. Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes. Good point.
I definitely want them to fully embrace it and do a full Filmation style episode.
I'm with you.
Right.
Groovy.
All right. Well, this has been fun, guys. It sounds like we all really enjoyed it, which Star Trek shows are not known for knocking it out of the park in season one. So it's really impressive that they managed to do that.
Good point.
But if people want to hear more about what you think, where can they find you on the internet, Alan?
Well, the best place is www.cosmicpress.com. And that's my publishing company. And you can find me. I run a page for the Who Lanta convention, Facebook page, and you can find me all over the place.
How about you, Keith?
Find me on Facebook and Instagram. I also have a Twitter handle, but I almost never use Twitter because you can't put enough words in it. So you try mostly Facebook for me.
And where can they find us, Veronica?
Feltnerdy.com, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Instagram, all the above.
All right. And we'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to Earth Station Trek. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. Give us a positive rating. You can also send us feedback at earthstationtrek@gmail.com. You can join in the fun on our Facebook group or follow us on Twitter. You can also visit us online at earthstationtrek.podbean.com. We'll see you next time. Live long and prosper.